The Linux Link Tech Show. The Linux Link Tech Show is on. Your link to the latest in GNU Linux and technology. An hour of insightful guests, tech info, and playful banter. Free software, free speech, open source, open mics. Live from the Linux Link Tech Show studio, here are your hosts, Dan, Alan, Pat, and Link. Link it up, and take it away. Take it away.
Why is it I have the volume
looks like
at less than 50% over here, and it still sounds like it's blowing our eardrums?
It looks like it wasn't just us that it did that to, because you're talking about ouching on
bleeding
the
ears, man.
Yeah, bleeding ears.
How did that happen?
Well, we unadjusted a bunch of things over there, so.
Why can't you guys get it right?
Alan the sound bitch's fault. That's what it is.
No, actually tonight is not my fault. I have no clue what the hell.
Everybody's got to come to LWE so that you can smack our sound bitch, Alan.
Bitch slap him.
We're gonna come there with a paddle. It'll be a contest.
Oh God, I can hear. I feel sorry for everybody. I can hear it out of headphones, and they're not even on.
Oh, man.
They're like 2 foot away from me, and I can hear the opening song.
It's
all of a
cranked.
Sudden. Sorry about that, everybody.
Oh,
you're
man.
Right there.
Yeah.
No, I have no clue what. I think Littlefingers may have been turning knobs again, Dan.
Blame the kids.
Only because
every time
that whole one line that you use to record is like all down at zeros right now.
You know what? This is a is that 19? That's all 19 inch,
zeros.
Right? It's a 19
it's,
inch.
Everything is turned kind of clockwise.
What we need to do
and
is we need to
what?
Get.
Well, the tonal quality at least should be like mid range,
okay,
on it rather than minus 10.
But I don't.
But for some reason, the monitor line was turned up, and I think that was we had this back a long time ago, on where we accidentally kicked the monitor line up on that line, which happens, which ends up doing a feedback loop between your machine back into the board again.
Yeah.
We don't hear it at the board side because it's not that pronounced at that point. But once it gets out onto the stream and gets compressed and goes out through the 9 dozen streams that we send out. That's when we started hearing it.
And you get the lag, which makes the echo more pronounced, right?
And it's hard for me to fix, because if I'm listening to the TLLTS.org server, I'm almost a minute behind what we're actually doing. So it's like, turn a knob, wait a minute or so. Meanwhile, everybody's talking, and Pat's doing
Sorry.
So it's just making it even worse for me.
Can you check my keyboard over there and make sure the caps lock?
This is the saddest thing I've ever heard in my life. Do you hear Alan? This is the most Alan has talked in 4 months, and all he's doing is backpedaling. So everybody bring your paddle, and we'll meet him at LWE.
CYA, man. Cover your ass.
Spank the patties.
What's going to happen? And this is my plan. Whether or not it comes off or not, I don't know. My plan is
what
for
are you
after
taking
we
off,
come
Alan?
Back. No, for,
that you save that for Dan afterwards, after the show.
My plan is for after when we come back from the show on it. I'm ripping apart everything over there, and we're gonna label stuff properly, and we're gonna actually all have to be over here Saturday afternoon so we can all do tests.
We've heard this before, haven't we?
No, I'm waiting for this now. Well, do you want me to rip it apart now? I'll tear it apart now. I don't give a shit.
Following in the fine example set by Dan in the past.
I was going to say, you know.
Dan, we got the show going. What?
If Dan can compile during the show, I'll at least rip apart wires.
Let me pull out the sound
card. What I was thinking,
card.
Right, is this is a... The compressor is a 19-inch rack mount component.
Yeah.
And I, at work, happen to have an old wall mount 19-inch rack mount with punch block.
Okay.
Ethernet punch block. That we can pull off, and we can just use the Walmart rack kit. You know, it's like a 2U or something like that. And we can just bolt the damn thing to the ceiling so that nobody could ever touch it with anything without a ladder.
What I was actually, I was looking for a small musician rack that has the covers that you can clip back on.
Right, right.
So we set everything once, we put the cover on there, and all we have to do is open it up to turn the power on.
Yeah.
That would be nice.
Yeah.
Well, let's get the show going, man. How's everybody this week? Link is finally back. He's gotten over the HIV.
Link is here. No HIV. No broken teeth. No, you know, we're in good shape. Broke, but good shape. Something.
Dan, getting rave reviews for his gamer podcast, Linux
yeah.
Gamer.
That was really, really
Lager?
Good. If you, Lager. Yeah, the rest of you guys have, like, if you haven't listened to that yet, man, you really should listen to that. and I'm so impressed with his, I'm so impressed with his kid,
the
too.
Only person in this yes. Conference. Paige did a very good job.
Yeah,
Lager. www.linuxlink.net/lager.
L-A-G-E-R.
It's on the main page too. The link is at the bottom of the Linux listings. But yeah, it's Linux and Games/Entertainment Radio.
That's
first,
right, folks.
First show was released on Sunday, late Sunday, early Monday morning. It was fun to do. I actually had too much stuff recorded, so I was going to hold it over to the next show. I have two people, Captain Obvious, 999, and how do you pronounce his name?
Sororos?
Sororos.
Our buddy in Denmark?
Yeah, they're both interested in co-hosting, which is grand. And some of the ideas, like the next show I was going to talk about Linux gaming distributions
yeah.
that I think are good for... playing around with games on, and Tesoros is interested in doing that too, so probably going to redo that little bit that I didn't include this show because I thought it was getting a little too long. It was like something like 40 minutes or so. But yeah, my for guests this time around, it was both of my daughters talking about Super Tux and Tux Paint. And,
good, yep.
And some
good,
other goodies.
Good show.
Good stuff. And
really good show.
I thought, for a little while there, I had some stuff planned out in my head of what we're going to do. What I was going to talk about until I find a new guest, and I had shows playing out for the next couple of shows, and then these two guys came on, and they have their ideas too, and looks like we got a ton of stuff for the future, and it's going to be hard not to make it a weekly podcast because there's just so much stuff to talk about now.
For now, right?
Until you run out.
Until you run out, and like we have 2 years ago on the tech show.
But we'll see how far it goes. I posted it to Elixir, and there was a problem with the link or something when it was up on Elixir, so I don't know how many people might actually been able to see it or try it out. I then also posted it to, what is it, iPodder.org or whatever it is.
Okay.
That podcast list, I think it is. Put a thing in there. I was going to do iTunes, but every time I go to iTunes, it brings up a thing you can't recognize a protocol. I think I need to go to actually do it through iTunes to set it up the first time or something.
Probably.
Or on an OS X machine, and I just haven't gotten around to doing that yet. But the feeds are there, both AUG and MP3.
Good stuff. Now, are you still, just out of curiosity, right, are you still handwriting your RSS feeds?
Of course.
See, now that's something
a manly man.
That's something I got to do. I really got to. I got to come up with a quick and dirty PHP program. I think that'll write the RSS feeds out for us.
See, the problem.
Yeah, I'm just a freaking.
The thing you need to be careful of
is.
Though is writing any programs like every 2 months or something. The standards
changes. Yeah,
and I test the I validate the RSS feed before I. Every time I post it, and like every 2 months they add another field in there, and it's usually something with iTunes or something. They add another field, and I got to go in.
I've noticed we still haven't gotten the picture to show up in iTunes.
I don't know what that's
about. Yeah, I'm not sure why that's not happening.
But we are marked as explicit.
Yes, we do have the little tags there.
We have our little explicit.
It's all your fault, Link. You're the explicit one.
Yep. Fucking people.
There you go.
Oh,
I'll say it in Spanish, man. Carajo.
There's a link just for you, Dan.
But
oh, no. We don't want to do that.
Come on, people. No freaky deaky
no
pictures,
more,
man. No fetishes,
calm
please.
Calm some of this stuff
please.
Down so that we can get some other
listeners.
Make us
puke, right?
No, this is audio, so.
All right. I don't want to hear it either.
Freaky deaky crap, man. Please.
I don't want to hear it either.
I'm going to have to
draw the line, man.
I'm going to have to put this somewhere so I can. I don't have to go back through the log later
on. Brazilian girls farting.
I don't have a problem with Brazilian girls, man, but I have no
farting?
Interest in bodily functions.
Well, it depends on the function.
Yeah, well.
I don't know. Shoot. Anyway, listen, I haven't been in here in a long time, so I'm going to rattle off and talk for a little bit. Even though, I've been on the show, but.
Please,
I haven't been here, and I wanted to make mention of my recent purchase. And for those of you who do not know about it already, you should really be reading my weblog. Because last week I went out and I caved and I bought a Intel Mac Mini, the low-end version.
Now, has the stranger showed up at your door and showed you the secret handshake yet?
No, I was waiting for you. You said you were coming over to give me the secret Apple handshake.
When you were sleeping, he arrived.
Oh, is that what that was?
Wouldn't you
was
say your ass hurt
off of
the
me
next
in the morning?
Day.
So
the Apple Fairy comes over.
So do you guys get like wet below the
is
belt?
Is that what you call Dan, the Apple Fairy?
So do you guys get wet anytime, you know, do you get wet belt below the belt anytime Steve Jobs says something?
No, not really. No.
But it is sweet looking.
Yeah, it's a nice little machine. It looks even better now that I went out and bought a 17-inch LCD flat panel for it. But no, the reason that I got this is I'm a professional Unix geek and I work on a lot of different Unixes, right? I work on HPUX and SCO still. Yeah, I know BooHiss, right? But I still run a SCOBOX, HPUX, Solaris. I've worked on AIX. The BSDs and stuff like that. And the only one I really haven't had a whole lot of experience on, other than, you know, playing for 5 minutes on Dan's laptop, the old one when he first got it, the snow laptop. Remember that, Dan? That's a really nice looking laptop. Anyway.
The snow laptop?
Yeah, the white snow one, the first one that you got.
I didn't have a white one. I had a silver one.
Wasn't it white?
No, it was silver.
He did have a white one.
No, I might have had a work one home at one time.
See, there it is.
White.
It was the work one that was
that
white.
That was an iBook.
But that was the first one that I played on. I really haven't played on with OS X since then, and I needed to have some little OS X experience. So I went out and got one. And I'll tell you what, there's a lot of little quirks and issues that I find annoying that probably your average person
quirks?
Wouldn't. Yeah. But overall, it's a nice little machine. It's something that I...
They need to make an iPod out of cork so it'll float when you drop it in the water.
It's something that I would recommend to...
Nobody?
I would recommend it to people instead of Windows. You know,
that doesn't say much, man.
No, it depends on the person. If I think the person has a lot of computer savvy, I might recommend that they... You know, just install Linux on their PC that they have. But if it, you know, something like my mom or something like that that's going out and getting wants to get a new computer kind of thing, I would probably recommend that she got a Macintosh running OS X. Then I know she's running, you know, there's no temptation for her to run Windows on it, number one. I know it's a supported operating system and it runs Unix. And
it runs that, you know, free BFD, right?
The free BFD, that's what it's running. By the way, and I know I mentioned this on my weblog, but OS X bears absolutely no resemblance whatsoever to BSD. Don't let anybody tell you that it does. If they tell you that it does, they're
punch
lying, and they either haven't used OS X or they have not used BSD. It does not resemble it in any way, shape, or form.
But it's BSD at the
core. What are you saying?
It's not BSD at the core.
We all
mock microkernel.
Bow down to the Church of Steve.
Yeah, it's definitely. Look at it. It's definitely a Steve operating system, right?
You know what? You're wrong, Link. Because OS X is true free BSD.
Yeah,
free
sure.
BSD just isn't free BSD.
That's what it is.
All right, OS
it's a cheap
10
copy,
is.
Man.
Yes.
It's a cheap copy.
Right? Even though it might have come out before OS X, it's free BSD. It's still a cheap copy.
Free BFD. People are asking for the link for my weblog. They should know that by now, right?
Yeah.
So how soon until you dual boot it?
I don't know.
With the XP one.
I still have some. No, I'll never have XP. I never have Windows running
on my
network.
That's just wrong.
Again.
I mean, I understand you can do it, but that's just wrong.
But I'll tell you, there's still some things I have to check out on it. I could not get it to log on to my wireless network yet. However, my...
Why?
I only tried it once for like 10 seconds, and it's using a wireless access point that I haven't used yet, an old shit one. And I just, you know, have been procrastinating and really busy at other times and haven't been able to plug into my Linksys and see if that works. And then I also have a D-Link at work that I could bring home and try to. Just haven't done it yet. I really need to do that soon, though, because I know that there are some issues with the wireless connection on the minis. And I want to find out if mine is one with the, one of those issues so I can, of course, get it replaced if it...
You know what the problem is with going to install Linux on the mini? Is now that you've gotten it to a point where you like it, you got to wipe it out so you can resize the partition.
Yeah, but that's all right because I really haven't gotten to a point where I'm like completely dependent on it, you know? I'm just kind of messing around with it. I've used it for an entire week except for today. Just, you know, the basic stuff, like the web browser, and I've been getting my mail on it, and I've been, you know, like listening to some stuff through the iTunes thing, and which is another thing that pisses me off. Unless I am wrong, unless I'm mistaken, and I don't believe I am, iTunes will not play an OGG file.
No, it won't.
That sucks,
you have to
man.
Get a plugin.
That completely rots.
You need to get a library plugin for QuickTime, which will then it should be able to play.
That rots.
Or is that wrong? Yeah, iTunes.
Yeah, I hadn't realized. I'd never played one through. I until Link told me tonight. I didn't even realize that.
Yeah, like half of my music collection that I ripped is you know ripped off of my CDs is they're OGG files.
Get VLC.
So yeah, Alan said that too. But VLC to play an OGG file? Holy crap, man! Is that like buying a freaking mainframe so you can read a text file kind of thing? That's like running Emacs. What the hell do I need that for?
I prefer running VLC for any media on OS X. I hate when QuickTime or iTunes... iTunes is such a dog hog.
Okay, now here's the thing.
QuickTime is a bastard that comes up with ads all the time. And do you want to upgrade the pro now? No.
Here's the thing.
You've got to upgrade your software plan and your hardware.
If I go on to the the Apple downloads page, and I download the VLC client. Does that automatically come with and install all the codecs, or do I have to like hunt around?
You don't have to install the codecs. The only thing I have not been able to play through VLC is the latest Windows Media Player files, but it should play everything right out of the box. I never installed downloaded codecs for it. I think it actually picks up the codecs that are on your machine, and it has the OGG stuff in there, too.
Yeah, I'll have to try that.
I mean, it's... our guest is here tonight.
Hello?
Hey, this is Dirk.
Hey, Dirk, how you doing? This is Pat from the Linux Link Tech Show. Welcome.
Can you hear us, Dirk?
You're breaking up terribly.
Hold on a second. Is that a little better? Okay. Just want to let you know, we are live right now.
Yes, we started a few minutes late. We had a little bit of a problem, but we've worked through it.
So if you say words like shit and stuff, everybody hears that.
But we don't mind, so it's okay.
But it's all right, yeah.
Well, we've got Dirk Hundel from Intel. Dirk, welcome to the show.
Welcome, Dirk.
For people who are not familiar with Dirk, he used to be the chief technical officer of SUSE, and he was an old X386 developer back in the day.
So at this point, I hear about every second syllable that you say. I think you just introduced me, but I don't think this is working.
Well, hold on a second. There.
And I'm on the... I'm not on Skype.
No, you're not on Skype. Right. Am I coming through clear to you?
Yes, you are.
Okay. Yeah, Pat had just introduced you, and that's pretty much where he was. He just introduced you right now. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing good.
And you're the chief Linux dude over there at Intel.
I'm one of the chief Linux dudes. We have a lot of Linux dudes.
Now, there was, for the longest time, if I'm not mistaken, a couple years ago, there was an impression that Intel may not have been so Linux-friendly. And I guess they've really come around.
I think there is a lot of disconnect between public perception and work that is actually being done. Intel has, for many years, done a tremendous amount of engineering work around Linux and core infrastructure and open source. And it has never been very visible. It has never been touted at conferences and with billion-dollar numbers. It has much more been a quiet effort. to just make stuff work well on our platform. And I think that has been very successful. What is true is that in the last few years, we have started to be a little more outspoken, mostly in response to the fact how many people ask us exactly the question that you just asked. Are you anti-Linux? No, Intel absolutely is not.
Okay. Now, you went from being the CTO of SUSE to Intel. Correct?
Yes.
And you were one of the original X386 developers.
Yes, that is true, too. I ran the X386 project for a few years.
Now, are you still working with X386?
Oh, no. I stopped working on X386 in 2001, a long time ago, long before the whole split and the X.org and all these things, all past my leaving.
So now, SUSE has been acquired by Novell, and do you still work with SUSE at all? Or, I mean, you probably have some kind of relationship with Novell and Intel, yes?
Well, so there are two levels here. On the one hand, Novell is an important strategic partner for Intel. We are certainly engaged with them both on an engineering level. We have engineer on site at Novell working with their engineering team to ensure that the software works well on our platform. And of course, we have a business relationship. I mean, all the usual things you would assume between companies in this space. On the other hand, there is my personal relationship with people who still work there back from the days that I worked with them, which is completely unrelated to that. I mean, that's a matter of personal friendships that just don't go away. And so I see people and talk to people, but that has nothing to do with the business relationship between the two companies.
All right. Now, probably the big news in the past couple of months has been Apple's move to Intel. And prior to that, they were on the PPC, and there was always a version of Linux that ran on PPC. How is Linux making way with running on the Apple Intel architecture?
That is a great question, and I have to claim complete ignorance. I am desperately waiting for my own MacBook Pro, but getting one to ship to you is even if you work for Intel, a lot harder than it seems. So I haven't even played with it myself. I've seen that a few people have looked at it. I have not seen any of the widely publicized efforts like we've seen with XP, that apparently last week the hack was found to boot XP on an iBook, on an iMac, respectively, and a MacBook Pro. But I haven't seen anything to that extent on Linux, and I'm not aware of any internal efforts that we would have to do that.
Okay. Because I know
a big part.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
A big part of the beauty of a MacBook Pro is certainly the combination of the hardware and the software. I don't know if that is necessarily a typical Linux platform.
It will be soon. I hope.
Say that again.
I said it will be soon. I hope.
I honestly don't know.
Here's a good question for you. What exactly is Intel doing to help promote Linux, and what sort of inroads are you making with that?
So our promotion of software in general is very limited. Our underlying strategy is always under this tagline of platform of choice. So we want to make sure that the software platform that a customer chooses runs well on our platform. We want to be the platform of choice. So you won't see us out there promoting one piece of software over another. We may do co-marketing that says, hey, this works well on our platform. But you will not really see us endorse or push one solution over another. Having said that, as part of this platform of choice message, we certainly are very engaged in helping the Linux ecosystem to create viable solutions for customers. And the key efforts that we have in that space, beyond our direct engineering engagements, where we have a significant number of engineers working on the kernel, on the tools, and on various levels of the infrastructure, we are very engaged as Platinum sponsors in the Open Source Development Lab, OSDL, which is where Linus and Andrew are working, and in the Free Standards Group, where I actually am on the board, which is the place where the LSB is created, and Lenana, and Open Printing, and OpenICE, and all the other good standardization efforts around Linux.
Okay, so what exactly is Intel's Linux and open source strategy then? What are you directly trying to do? Supporting the software and the kernel and things like that.
So what we're trying to do is we're trying to create a viable, useful software environment that fulfills customer needs in markets where Linux is asked for. We have had a significant investment in carrier-grade Linux, where the telcos told us they would like to switch from proprietary platforms to Intel, but they need an operating system that fulfills their needs. And we helped the industry to get Linux to the space where it is now an accepted and very successful operating system for the telcos. We have had similar efforts around data center Linux, around reliability and manageability of Linux systems. We are the people who host the Linux Performance Project, so we basically run a rather big set of benchmarks on every single release candidate and even on many of the Git steps before the release candidate that Linus and Andrew put out. So any regressions of performance kernel. We do a lot of things, often a little more in the background, in simply getting Linux ready for this market. Marketing of Linux is what the Linux vendors do. That is not normally what the platform vendors do.
Are you aware of what's been dubbed the Chinese Halloween documents that have been posted, I think the past couple of weeks, about Intel's strategy in China for promoting Linux on the desktop?
I'm not aware of posted documents. I can certainly talk to our strategy with Linux on the desktop in China. The Chinese market, like a couple of other emerging markets, India, Brazil, Philippines, has shown significant interest in Linux solutions on the desktop for the client. And we have actually an office that is working on more or less closing the gap that people are seeing today, and helping our channel partners to be successful in this market and be able to sell Linux-based solutions into this market. That's the high-level summary. Very little exciting news for people who are hoping for Linux on the client in the U.S., as it is very specific for these markets and for the needs in this market. But it's an effort that has been going on for, I'd say, about a year and a half.
So then, of course, you just mentioned it's not so exciting for the United States market or probably Western European market. Is there just not a demand for that yet in the U.S. and in Europe?
We see extremely little demand. So if you break it down, what happens, you have us, the hackers, the people who, of course, use Linux as a desktop and who don't need much support from anybody to make that work for them. We have a small segment around education, so K through 12 universities that build labs based on Linux, and where we actually are engaged and have a couple of projects. And you see a tiny minority of commercial users who usually look for not so much what we tend to call the knowledge workers, or the people who work with a lot of applications, with office-type applications, with third-party applications, but people who are more in data entry, call center, limited application scenarios. So there is, for example, a solution based on Linux for hotel chain, the check-in of customers. That is, of course, a very restrictive kind of desktop scenario. It's almost more a terminal to a back-end server than a full-fledged desktop. But those are the type of spaces in which we actually see Linux successful. Outside of that, especially for the consumer market, there is literally zero demand.
That's a bummer.
Yes, I mean, I have spent, 8 years of my life trying to make Linux on the desktop happen. And so I certainly am personally disappointed. But on the other hand, since we talked about Apple earlier, if you run a macOS, and let's forget being a geek, if you give a macOS system to your mother, or you give a Linux desktop, a Fedora Core 5 or an NLD10 to your mother, the chances of them having a positive experience are unfortunately still quite different. And that, I think, is at the core of this issue. The usability for the non-technically advanced person is still a key issue for the desktop Linux version, as much as they are certainly moving forward.
So, your analogy there, and let me clarify that. If you give an OS X machine that's already ready to go and a Linux machine that's already ready to go to your mother, are you saying that more than likely she's going to adapt better and have more functionality out of the OS X machine as opposed to the Linux machine?
Okay, so my mother, of course, is a very bad example, because my mother actually has been using a client Linux system since 1994. When I moved to the U.S. for the first time and set up a system from which she could email me in the U.S. But in general, for the non-technical user, so somebody's mother, a person who might be a member of the AARP, yes, I believe that using an OS X based system is a lot easier for people like that, a lot more streamlined, a lot more self-explanatory, a lot less fraught with issues and risks and things that don't quite work than a Linux box. I mean, I use a Linux box as a client, as one of my many clients. And I believe I have the credentials that I kind of know what I'm doing on a Linux client system. And still, I much more frequently run into something where I say, damn, why isn't this working? I bought myself a beautiful Dell 24-inch monitor. And getting a OpenSUSE 10.0 system to actually display 1920 by 1200 widescreen on this monitor took me, who is one of the X386 authors, a day of fiddling. And I plug in my Macintosh that I have here for digital photography work, and it simply brings a stable picture at maximum resolution. That's the kind of thing where I say, you know, it's just there is still a gap that we as the Linux enthusiasts need to be mindful of and need to be honest to ourselves about.
See, I have a similar experience I'd like to share. I just purchased a Mac Mini over the last week, and I went out and bought a brand new, you know, quite standard 17-inch Acer flat panel LCD, and I plugged it into my Mac Mini and was presented with a wonderful screen. It was beautiful. However, it was an 800 by 600 resolution. when the Acer does 1280 by 1024. And I might add, when I plugged it into my Linux box, it pulled it right up at 1280 by 1024, which is the maximum resolution. So I have exactly the opposite problem. However, the only difference there being is that you had yours is like widescreen, right? Your monitor?
Exact, yeah.
I wonder if that's the deal.
That is a problem because I have the same thing at work. Like, the widescreens just don't work right.
That's studio display, right?
No, not my machine at work.
No?
It's a 16:9.
Okay.
But it doesn't, it puts everything, you know, square or circles become sort of egg-shaped.
Oh. Neat. You don't like the egg shape?
No, not when you're doing CAD work, no. It doesn't. You're trying to lay out circuits, egg-shaped things don't really work well.
I blame the older developers of the X386 project.
That's what it is.
I think that's absolutely a fair statement, and I'll take that in the stride. If somebody had given me a 16:10 display 10 years ago, things might be different today. No, seriously, I mean, the comment about the display where you had problems with the Apple is absolutely fair. And maybe the benchmark is not so much plugging in new hardware, because that is a truly difficult problem. To me, it's also the issue of what is the user experience using different pieces of software, browsing the web, trying to interact with others, trying to, you know, work with digital photos, trying to, you know, do the stuff you want to do on a computer today. If you have played with something like the iLife software that comes with any Apple today, I think that is actually very good software. And we need to be mindful of the difference of the end user experience. My favorite example, if you look at Photoshop and the GIMP can do anything Photoshop can do. It is the most amazing program out there. But the user interface is made by the devil. And anybody who can productively use the GIMP has my deepest respect. And I've been a big fan of the GIMP for, I don't know, 7-8 years. And I still can't, anything that I want to do is a fight. And you use Photoshop either on the Windows or on the Mac, actually, and things are just much easier. And I think that is the point I'm trying to make. It's not so much that if you look at the absolute technical specs, the same functionality is most likely there on both sides, but the devil is in the detail, and the ease of use and the engineering perfection is different. I'll get in trouble, but I'll do it anyway. I'm now officially not speaking for any employer, past or present. I'm just speaking for myself. If you buy a Ford Mustang, you know, a 300 horsepower muscle car, great car, technical specs are amazing. And if you put next to it a BMW M3, it actually has specs that are slightly inferior, and, you know, it's like 5 times as expensive. Nonetheless, if you actually get in and drive, you see why one is the engineered end-to-end perfect car, and the other one has all the same technical specs, you know, 4 wheels, 300 horsepower, and all the things, but it's just not. And that, to me, is kind of the difference between what we experience on the desktop with Linux, which has all the things and everything is there. It just doesn't quite work together the same way. And if it's slightly wet and you hit the accelerator in a slight right turn, you will see the difference. Bad example, but that's the only one I can come up with in live show.
So you think, I mean, with the progress being made in GNOME and KDE in particular, I mean, is it, you think it's going to eventually get there? Or do you think they're going?
Absolutely. I've said, and and this is when time catches up with you. 5 years ago, six years ago, in the summer of 2000, in an interview back then as the CTO of SUSE, I said within 5 years, Linux will be on par with any other desktop OS. I was a little over-optimistic. I absolutely believe that it will close the gap and that it will leap ahead in some areas. If you compare Firefox with other web browsers today, Firefox is clearly the best web browser out there, which means it is possible for open source projects on the client to be the leading technology. I am convinced that this will be possible for the whole OS. Is it there today? I'm sorry. I'm very disappointed to say I don't think so.
Just need to work on that integration.
It's integration, it's fine-tuning, it's ergonomics, it's a lot of little stuff. And here's my personal explanation of why this has been hard. If you look at the people who write open source software, those are people who are, in general, technically very competent and who are, you know, good developers who really understand what they're doing. So they are easily capable to use 10 different programs that have slightly inconsistent user interfaces and where you need to use a few command line options to get things the way you want them and where you may have to hack a config file that everything works together. Because, you know, that's how we are. But that mindset doesn't work for the end consumer, the mass market. And the difference in spending on people who do the base engineering, putting together the underlying technology, versus the spending on people who do the spit and polish and coordination and integration and the ergonomic fine tuning that makes the difference. I believe that is where, in the client space, the big difference is between especially macOS and Linux, but in some sense still even with Windows. And that's the thing where it will be very hard for the open source community alone to close that gap. But there are now a lot of players out there between Ubuntu and Novell and Mandriva more and more even Red Hat, who say, yes, we want to work on this, and who put money and effort and engineering hours towards that problem. And so I think it will be solved.
Only time will tell. But, I mean, the gap's got to be, it's closing, and eventually it's going to catch up.
Yeah, I mean, I've been wrong the last time I made any prediction on this, so you will forgive me for not making another prediction in N years. But I'm very optimistic that the quality of the engineering that is being done in open source will prevail here and will be successful.
Now that's interesting because I have a slightly differing opinion, just slightly. I completely see where your point is going. My normal position that I take on this is that we are at some point you're going to be making a slightly dumber screwdriver instead of teaching people how to use a screwdriver. Did I just lose everybody or what?
You certainly lost me.
It's what it boils down to is at some point we're losing the actual functionality of of the operating system, and what we're doing is we're creating a dumb interface that any retard can use.
You're dumbing it down. It's basically what you're
saying. It dumbs it down so much that it stops becoming useful almost. And
yeah,
I think we're reaching that point. I think we're getting close to that. You know.
No, I don't agree with that. I really don't agree with that. If I look at the things that I can do with ease with a Linux system today, I am fascinated by it. And if I look at the things that can be done with other software, it's quite impressive. And yes, our expectation of how much does the user need to learn in order to be able to use this are becoming higher and higher, or lower and lower, depending on how you look at the metrics. So we expect this to become ever easier. But on the other hand, again, if I go back to a car, if you look at the biggest mistake that some of the vendors have made, is to create user interfaces inside the car that no one can use and that people hate, that are too complicated. See BMW's iDrive, which they are dumbing down and making it simpler so people can actually use it. So the point is to create very powerful tools with very simple interfaces.
Certainly,
and
but
that is hard.
Certainly, but going to your to your car analogy, nobody has yet taken away the steering wheel and the gas pedal, and that's what they're working on with computers.
I don't think that is true. I don't think anybody's taking away your keyboard or your mouse.
They're getting close to that. You know, I expect any day for someone like Apple to come out with their next big innovation. You know, a few years down the road is going to be to completely integrate their speech recognition system into the computer, where it's on by default and you don't get any other interface. You know what I mean? It's going to be a hard deal for you to plug a keyboard in. I see it working that way, and I think that's going to reduce the functionality of the machine. You know, we're dumbing things down until it's going to be an email machine kind of thing.
I think what you're saying is absolutely correct. There will be a market and an attempt to address this market that goes towards machines that have no keyboard, have no mouse, that project images on your retina and just, you know, listen to your voice. And those systems will have very narrow use cases. This may be your next cell phone. This may be your mobile device that you have with you. This may be the system used in a control center or something. But the system that you use as your generic multi-purpose PC, to the system on which you can do software development and you can play games and you can surf the web and write email, the system that truly is multi-purpose and the tool, the Swiss Army knife that you use, I don't think that this system will infinitely dumb down. I, quite to the contrary, think that just as we've seen over the last few years, the systems will become more and more powerful. If you look at the ease with which it is possible today to create your own little video podcast. If you tried that 5 years ago, it would have been incredibly difficult to create at home a video podcast. Today, with the tools that are available, it's truly easy. So it is not that the system has become dumb. It's that the user interface to do something very complicated has become easier. And I think that's the direction this is going to get to go. And yes, there will be the spin-off. I mean, we have things like we had things like the Palm 5, which was a great device, which has this completely obnoxious graffiti alphabet that you use. And so that was considered a great device. I, like most people, I had one. And then the next thing comes up and has a better user interface, a better way to interact with it. So you use the BlackBerry, and suddenly you have the keyboard and the thumb wheel, which works actually much better than Palm. And if you look at it, the functionality of the BlackBerry is significantly better than anything that Palm had. So even though the user interface is getting easier, it's getting easier to use, the functionality is going up. I apologize for the screams in the background. I have 16-month-old twins.
And I thought that was Dan's kids.
Yeah, I thought that was my kid, so I didn't know.
You fit right in, Dirk.
Don't worry about it.
Right before dinner, the girls are a little cranky.
That's understandable.
No naps.
Well, no, they had their nap today, but since my wife is now alone trying to feed them, since I'm giving an interview, it's a little harder.
It's tough.
Anyway. Keep going, guys.
Oh. Pat, you sound like you want to say something.
Hopefully,
Pat.
Dirk can understand what I'm saying. In the past, you know, there was this whole debacle with Intel, you know, going to bring in DRM into the CPU, and then they backed away from that. Are they any as far?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the beginning of their question. You were breaking up. Can you try again?
Pat was bringing up about in the past. I don't know what Pat. What are you going to ask?
So, will there be DRM in future CPUs?
Okay, the issue with DRM being incorporated down at the hardware level on Intel's CPUs and chipsets, is that going to be something that's going to be a problem for Linux or users in general?
So DRM is a fascinating, very complicated issue. That actually crosses a lot of different disciplines. And depending on what you use your DRM for, it's something that you might actually want, or it's something that you might actually be quite unhappy about. All legal concerns aside, DRM can be very useful if you are actually protecting your own privacy with it. I certainly do not want an identity thief to be easily able to get to my identifying data and impersonate me on the net or on a talk show. But the question that you asked, so what I'm trying to say is DRM in itself is not evil. DRM in itself, all it does is manages the right to access certain data.
Well, I don't think anything is evil in and of itself. It's the using it that's evil.
Yeah, so what people can do with it is evil. Absolutely. You can do things with DRMs. Could envision a world where on your computer you no longer control which software can run on it. That is certainly a very scary thought. I am not in a position to make statements about future technologies that Intel may or may not include in our platform. The one thing I can tell you is that anything that may or may not be included is always configurable, and you're always able to say, no, I don't want that, and can turn it off. So in your BIOS settings, in your hardware setup, you could always say, I mean, if you look today at hyper-threading or at virtualization technologies that we have added to our platform, you can always go on your BIOS and say, I don't want hyper-threading. I don't want VT. I don't want virtualization. And that's fine, and you can turn it off, and then you're missing functionality, but you're not forced to use that. And if ever, and I really can't say, if ever a technology came that would require signed binaries or whatever it is that where you're going with this, it would certainly be something that you could turn off.
Good answer. Good answer. Because, you know, a lot of what we're worried about is, this society here in the United States is so litigious now that many of us feel, myself included, that big corporations are just looking for a way to get over on the little guy and suck as much money out of the working stiff as they possibly can. And DRM is a way to do that, as evidenced by by all the RIAA lawsuits, the frivolous suits and all that kind of crap that's going on now. We're concerned about companies like Intel enabling these people to do that. You know what I mean?
So
enabling
just,
them.
Just to defend a concept here.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at these lawsuits, they have nothing to do with VRM. They have something to do with an interpretation of the copyright law, and they have something to do with actual criminal acts that are happening, and they have something to do with a completely overzealous monopolist who's trying to protect their monopoly and trying to protect their backwards yesteryear's business model.
Sure.
It simply doesn't understand what you can do with technology.
Sure. Absolutely. But the thing with that is, and I agree completely, but the thing with that is what the average, not the average consumer, but, you know, the techie consumer, the Linux consumer, is worried about DRM being available and being a method to facilitate the kind of business practices that are going on now that we would rather see go away. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and quite frankly, I don't think that a chip vendor really is the decision maker here. Let's use an easy example. Apple's iPod and the iTunes Music Store. This is something that you decide to use because you like the design, you like the software, you like the available selection of music and podcasts, you like whatever, somebody gave you an iPod for Christmas. So it is not the underlying hardware that enables this DRM-driven ecosystem, but it's the actual consumer who makes the purchase. The fear that you and, oh, by the way, I have is the fear that someone locks away the Internet, locks away all information from the fair use. I mean, if you listen to Lawrence Lessig, to the messages from the EFF, the Electronics Frontiers Foundation, those are the things that scare me. And yes, a DRM could be the tool that allows that to happen.
Right.
And therefore the ability to always turn this off is important.
Right, exactly.
But the really scary thing is actually the regulatory side of it. The fact that there is now discussion and proposals from SBC and Verizon and Comcast to do a tiered internet,
mm-hmm.
where certainly net neutrality is no longer there, but it is possible to charge to somebody who pays a higher fee to get their data faster across the Internet than, for example, your podcast, because you're not willing to pay FCC for that. That's what's scary. The idea that the way the DMCA is phrased, it allows companies to prohibit what not so long ago was clearly considered fair use. Those are the things that scare me. And needless to say, I am not speaking for Intel. I'm speaking for myself. I'll have Intel smart people give their position on that. But to me, that's what scares me in the world. And that has nothing to do with the technology. It may be the technology that is then used to enforce that, but it's the intent of these people that really scares me.
So what we're coming down to saying, what you're saying to us is DRM technology, trusted computing platform on the Intel hardware, not going to be a problem for Linux, regardless of whether you have it turned on or turned off.
Not going to be a problem for Linux. Absolutely not.
Good.
And so essentially this is something that software can take advantage of and not necessarily be used in a malicious way. It could be used in a beneficial way.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at some of the first early implementations of this trusted platform, there are actually Linux implementations that take advantage of that. So the NSA, of all places, has developed an open source project, Secure Linux, that uses some of the concepts of trusted computing to create a, as the name indicates, secure platform that they are willing to do their secret work on. Right. And that's an open source project. Much of this has actually flown back into the Linux kernel through the security modules.
That's an impressive piece of work that they've gone and supported that. And you know what? By the end of this year, if you're an FBI agent in New York, you might actually be able to use it. I'm sorry, I had to throw that in there. Current news item. FBI in New York, FBI agents don't even have email addresses yet. So. I just read it on the news today. I thought it was funny, so.
I think as a guest in this country, I should take my rights under the Fifth Amendment and just not comment on that.
And you are originally from Germany, correct?
I'm a German citizen in the U.S. on a green card, yes.
Which part of Germany?
I'm from northern Bavaria, from a small town called Schweinfurt, about an hour to the northwest of Nuremberg.
That's a nice area.
It is beautiful. It's actually one of the nicest wine regions in Germany. So the famous Bocksbeutel, the odd-looking bottles, are actually home where I'm from.
That's cool. I've been to Germany myself, and that is a beautiful country.
Beer.
I'm more of a wine person, I have to admit.
So you should have been born in France then, huh?
No.
They have good wines in Germany.
Pardon me?
There's good wines in Germany, too.
Oh, absolutely, yes. Some of the best. Not that I'm prejudiced or anything.
No.
Of course not.
Actually, they make very good wines here in Oregon. I now live in Portland, and the Pinot Noirs you can get here in Oregon are just outstanding.
So now are you
Portland, Oregon, home to Symantec, I believe, right? Symantec is out there.
You also got the OSDI.
The guys who write all the viruses for Windows so that they can sell their software. See, there's no comment now. Everybody knows. Yeah. Everybody knows I'm right, right?
Please don't want to get you started on that again.
The OSDL is in Portland. I think that's very important.
Yes, OSDL headquarters is out in Beaverton, so that's the next town out towards the west from Portland. Linus lives here in Portland. There is this joke about the Linux forest here, because there are a lot of Linux developers, a lot of Linux centers here in the Portland area. IBM's Linux Technology Center has its headquarters here in Beaverton. Intel's Open Source Technology Center has its headquarters here in Oregon. There is, of course, the Oregon State University Open Source Labs. There's OSDL. There's a lot of good open source technology being done here in Oregon.
Now, with all that heavy-duty Linux firepower out there in Oregon, has there been any... You know, has it encouraged local businesses or Linux adoption in that area in general?
Yes, so there is an incubator here that is helping small companies who want to grow around Linux and open source around the ecosystem. So the folks from Compeer actually have moved into this incubator at PSU. And there are a lot of initiatives locally with schools and local governments to create open source solutions. Unfortunately, there was a bill in the local government here to push more open source into public projects, but that was killed in committee.
So they're even in Portland, where they have all this high-powered Unix people, they're fighting the adoption of Linux tooth and nail.
I think they weren't fighting the adoption of Linux. They were trying to prevent what happened in Massachusetts, that this whole thing becomes a politicum and it becomes a zoo.
Did they already have the financial contributions and backings of Microsoft to fund their vacations, and that's why they made their decision, right?
I honestly cannot tell you why they made the decision. That is beyond my knowledge. I just know that a lot of projects are done, especially here in the local schools, and that there is a very strong local Linux community, both in the public agencies and in companies. So there's a very healthy open climate.
I bet that's one hell of a lug meeting going on in Portland, huh?
You can say that, yes.
Now, are you part of the Portland lug?
I used to be. Right now, with the way my family life keeps me busy in the evening, I no longer am.
Yeah. So we have a nice little lug around here, and there's a few people in this room that don't show up.
Life goes on.
And they don't have,
I have
sorry.
To say that Linus doesn't show up to the Portland lug either.
That's shameful.
There you go.
I know.
The next time you run into Linus, tell him that he really should consider returning our emails once in a while so that maybe we could get him on the show.
I'm sure he's a busy guy.
Because all the important people in Linux development have been on the show except for him. So.
Yeah, so I'll be at his house tomorrow. I'll let him know.
All right.
Thank you.
You do that.
I'm sure he's a really busy guy, man.
Yeah, I wouldn't doubt it. Very busy guy.
Gee, and I thought Dan had something
to say. I wouldn't want to have his email traffic, to be honest with you. I get a lot of emails, but there's absolutely no contest to the amount of email that gets sent his way. So
I bet he's never even seen our emails to get to him, you know?
He's got a filter that dumps them all to dev null.
Yeah, yeah.
But no, he has a very...
You know, we got right through to the installment.
He has a what?
He has a very quick D key.
Yes.
D is D.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah. So I guess you like to use Mutt or Pine for email?
I'm a Mutt user. I think is still a Pine user.
Okay.
Yeah, Pine.
Pine, and you are... Did you say you're a Mutt user?
I'm a Mutt user. I used to be a Pine user. I switched to Mutt, I don't know, 7-8 years ago. And now I have Mutt hardwired to my fingers, which is beautiful. You can be very fast with Mutt if you don't have to think about what you have to type. If you have to think about it, it's painful.
And, of course, you're using SUSE, right, as your Linux distribution of choice?
Oh, God. Again, this is Dirk Hondel speaking, not Intel speaking. I'm, as an old SUSE person, I'm still using OpenSUSE, yeah.
Well, we knew you had to be using SUSE because you're from Germany, and I have yet to speak with anyone from Germany who is not using SUSE.
And he was CTO of SUSE.
Yeah,
and he
was
mentioned
CTO
that he
of
was
SUSE,
using
right.
OpenSUSE. Right. You using OpenSUSE 10.0?
I am, yes.
And I heard that's really, 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 really good.
It's very nice. I like it. And I've looked at the 10.1 betas, and I like them too. So I run my web server, my mail server. I have like currently 4 different systems running on OpenSUSE. I'm quite happy with it.
And what are you using for your window manager of choice or your desktop manager? KDE?
I'm
GNOME?
Screen.
KDE. Actually, this is funny. Back in the days when
TWM,
I really wrote X drivers, which means that whatever system you have has a graphic card that is not yet supported.
Right.
I was working more in text mode than most likely anybody else. But now that I don't do that anymore, I use KDE.
And you do all your coding in VI, right? Or Emacs?
Oh my God, Uh-oh. You're trying to...
Oh, yeah.
I'm one of those people who actually use both, but I prefer VI.
Aha, right. Good man.
Yeah.
good man, because there's no sense in starting up an entire entire secondary operating system in order just to write a text file.
You know, but when we all started with this 15 years ago, the word 8 megabytes and continuously swapping was actually impressive, because 8 megabytes, my first Linux box was a 386SX16 with 4 megabytes of memory, and that's what I compiled the first version of x386 on. And so 8 megabytes and constantly swapping was a very impressive description of Emacs. Of course, today when your laptop has 2 gigabytes, it doesn't really sound that impressive anymore.
I remember those days, though. How long did it take you to compile X-Free on a 386?
My first build, this is before X-386 changed its name to X-386, so this is the X-386 1.2E story. Mm-hmm. This is in 92. The first build took a little over 23 hours.
Ouch.
Wow.
Yeah, you can say that again.
You can get that magic back by using Gen 2.
Right.
The GCC screensaver.
The GCC screensaver.
Oh, my God, yeah.
You can download Gen 2 and compile every damn program.
Yes, and it is quite amazing how things have changed from you know, when Linux was started in 91 to where we are today in what you expect in compile times. The Linux kernel, a 0.11 Linux kernel, you could print this out and you had about 80 pages of print. And compiling this kernel took longer than it takes me today to compile the 2.4 million lines of code that Linux kernel has today.
Right. Yep, I remember that. I tell you what, when you said that you worked in text mode when you first started in Linux, you worked mostly in text mode. Man, that really brought me back, because I remember up through, boy, my first few distributions up through maybe Red Hat 5.2. That's what I did too, because I could never, you know, I could never find a monitor or a video card that would ever.
Yeah, so this is, allow me to get X working. I started with Linux on 0.11, mm-hmm. So that's what, November 91. And back then there was no such thing as an X Window system. I mean, there was there wasn't really much.
Right.
There was no login. There was no virtual memory. There were no virtual TTYs. It was a very limited system. But once we got the socket code implemented so that you could actually create a socket, which is the requirement to actually even think about starting X. So that's what Oris Zabrowski did. The reason why I really got stuck with X was because both of my computers had graphic cards that weren't supported. And back then, the only generic driver was the VGA 16 driver.
Right.
So, $16. And that was completely and utterly unusable for anything. And that's how I got started. So I had a Seng ET3000, and I can't even remember what the number of my Western Digital card, or back then Western Digital still made graphic cards. And so I was sucked into this because I had cards that didn't work with the very first alpha that Oris did, and that's how I, you know, you scratch your own itch and you get drawn in, right. And before you know it, you own the code.
Yes, indeedy. But I tell you, that does bring memories. That was the first card that I ever got X working on, was a Western Digital card. And after hours and hours and hours of tweaking, I was able to get 16 colors at 640 by 480, which I thought was just awesome at that point in time. Because I'd been running for like a year and a half. I'd been running Linux on a box in a corner, wouldn't know X at all. So I thought that was cooler than
I remember the feeling. First time seeing the X root weave,
mm-hmm.
And then the X cursor coming up, like, woo, look at this, beautiful. Yeah, it's a change.
Yeah, and you take that and contrast that to the desktops now that we're using, and we're still bitching and moaning that the desktop Linux has not arrived yet, you know?
But I think you actually bring up a very good point, because if you look at the incredible change from if you booted X on Linux in 95, and you most likely used FVWM,
right,
and had a few Xterms open. There was no Office package at all. The only graphics package that I can remember was XFIG, which is awesome, as I'm sure you remember.
Mm-hmm.
And if you compare that to Windows 95, wow, what a difference, right?
Right.
Now, fast forward 10 years, I think we are a lot closer.
I think so, too, because I think Windows is still too close to Windows 95, you know? I mean, they might have changed the interface from crayon to magic marker, but let's face it, it's the same shit.
No, it was magic marker to crayon.
All right, magic marker to crayon.
Fisher-Price.
One of the two. We've gone from, you know, schoolboy to Fisher-Price or something. I don't know. But Linux has come a long way, and I still hear people complaining that desktop Linux has not arrived yet, even though I have only been using Linux on my desktop for years now. I still hear people tell me that.
I gave my first public presentation using a Linux laptop in 93. And I've been using a Linux desktop at home as my main desktop ever since 93. So I certainly have seen a lot of those changes.
Sure.
I still think that we, as the Linux guys, need to be honest with ourselves and not just, you know, put our head in the sand and say, oh, we are the best. And that's why I said earlier there are still differences that I certainly can see and that end users can see. It's not about saying nothing has improved. It's about saying that we're not quite over the goal line yet.
I don't know. Do you think we're always going to be? I mean, we're eventually. They're going to get it. They're definitely going to get it. But do you think it's going to be enough to push people over from, say, Windows to a better choice?
I don't know next week's Powerball numbers either. I think we have seen with Firefox that open source projects clearly can take the lead and clearly can get very nice adoption. But with all that, Firefox still has only about 10% of the total browser market. And so will Linux get there from a usability, from a capability, from a feature point of view? Absolutely. Will it have meaningful, substantial market segment share? I don't.
It's going to make me cry.
We all know it's not about the best software wins now, do we?
No, it's about who can market to the sheeple better.
And here I was hoping we'd close the interview on a positive note.
Oh, we'll close it on a positive note.
Positively, Linux is better than Microsoft.
And Intel
positively.
It's better than Apple.
Is committed.
Intel is committed to making Linux better.
Yes.
Than Windows.
Here is a statement that I'd be very, very careful. Intel is certainly committed.
I don't know. We're going to go to the Linux World Expo pretty soon, and I'm going to ask the Intel folks there, and I bet you they will tell me.
Dirk's going to be there. We can ask him again.
They're going to tell
me. I'll be there, absolutely.
All right. Then when I come there, I'm going to bring my recorder, and then I'm going to listen to everybody around you tell me that they're committed to making Linux better, the best platform.
We absolutely make Linux better. I am just a little hesitant on any comparative statement.
See, not only are they making Linux better, but they're going to give us all Intel-based 64-bit
You're
systems.
Breaking up.
That's convenient right there. Go ahead, tell him.
He was actually be breaking up. It would have been a great excuse, but he was breaking up.
I'm sorry. You're not only committed to Linux, but you're going to commit to giving us some of the latest 64-bit Intel architecture PCs.
Sure. Don't
I think that's beyond my capabilities.
No. Of course it isn't beyond your capabilities. You're the representative over there. And I just want to point out that, you know, you being the Linux representative for Intel and we being the Linux representative for, you know, the people, that it would behoove you to make sure that we had some wonderful Intel equipment to test Linux on.
You know, I absolutely just, agree with you. But you I can show you the aisle at Fry's, but you can buy them.
Oh. So any big stuff coming out from Intel in the next couple of months that we in the Linux community should be aware of?
Yeah, I mean, God. So there are two ways this can go from here. I can pull out my speaking notes from Intel's marketing people and tell you the cool stuff that's coming. I don't think you really want that.
No, tell us the truth.
Actually, that is pretty close to the truth.
Here we go.
Intel's legal department is an amazing machine, and Intel is so damn paranoid about everything that we say. It's in a way boring. You can't make any bold statements because legal will just shoot you down. Can't say that. Can't say that either.
Okay,
can't say that either.
Theoretically, what kind of things should we be looking for?
So what is coming and what is actually really exciting is the new microarchitecture. So over the next four months, we will see the new chips coming out, codenamed Conroe, Merome, and Woodcrest. So Conroe is the desktop, Monroe is the laptop, and Woodcrest is the on the server. And they're all based on a new microarchitecture that is more or less the successor of what you have in the Core Duo today. And that's going to be pretty jaw-dropping. Both the performance and especially the power consumption will change dramatically, and they will both change in the right direction. So you'll get significantly faster chips at noticeably lower power. And that's exciting for two reasons. Reason one, hey, anybody likes faster chips. Reason two, if you have faster chips that suck less power, you can create much cooler machines. So what's coming the next 6 months in new form factors, both for laptops and for desktops, is really exciting. And this is not marketing BS. This is very honestly what you'll see. And additionally, I'm very, very happy, trust me, very happy that we're going to take the performance crown back, and we will have clearly and substantially the fastest chips out there. And that's kind of nice, too.
And they're all going to run with Linux right out of the box, right?
Oh, that quieted you down.
No, I said it's going to run with Linux right out of the box.
Or Skype has hung up on me. You guys still there?
Yeah, can you hear me?
We're still here.
I can't hear a thing.
You can't hear a thing?
Dum, dum, dum,
hello?
Hello?
It appears that this might be the end of our interview.
Yeah.
Hello? How did that happen?
It could be anything. He could have had a dropout.
But no, he's still connected.
Yeah, it's kind of weird.
He's still there?
Why don't you try disconnected from the chat room and jump
back in
real quick. See if we can get him back.
Hello? Can you hear me now?
Now I can hear you.
I don't know what the heck happened there. Yeah, we could hear you the whole time.
I felt quite lonely for a while.
Oh.
No. What I said when you right after you were finished, and I said it's going to work right out of the box with Linux when Conroe and all the other chips are released. Yes?
Oh, absolutely, of course.
So now you mentioned that these new chips are coming out with decreased power requirements. Are we talking about getting a substantially better performance or the same sort of performance we're used to expecting now without the necessity of having to force air cool the processor chips and things like that? Are we getting in low enough temperatures where we can start running silent machines that aren't water cooled and stuff?
Yes, you will be able to build fanless systems that have certainly at least the performance that you're used from a desktop today. You will be able to build extremely small form factor laptops that have same performance and same battery life that you're used to today. And you will even on the server side have significantly dropped power envelope at the high end of the server, which is very interesting for large data centers. Mm. So yeah, this is substantial. This is big.
And this is 64-bit processors?
Oh, yes.
Are you just going to, like, whip out 120-bit, 128-bit processors on us and not let us know, right?
There is the famous quote that no one will ever need more than 640 kilobytes of RAM.
Right.
At the risk of being ridiculed by my own children, I don't see us run out of address space with 64 bits anytime soon.
We'll call you back on that in a couple years.
Absolutely.
But yeah, that's really good, and that's interesting because, you know, I mean, people are still concerned. I remember the stories on the internet back, last year at this time, where people were bitching and moaning about burning their testicles on their laptop. So, you know, if we can get a little bit more performance out of a cooler processor, hey, that's a boon for us.
I count on heating my house with the laptop.
No.
Dan heats his house with his servers, just like I do.
I moved my servers out into the garage, actually, because they were too loud.
Must be a compact.
Good thinking, yeah. It must be a compact.
I don't have a garage to put my servers in.
Try the basement.
My server is Dan's Windows box.
Dan's Windows box. My basement's unfinished, so it's a little too damp down there for servers. They won't be humming anymore. They'll be dead. Oh, Link, anything else?
I think that's it. I think that's it. I had my fun, you know.
Dirk, we hope to see you at the Linux World Expo.
Yeah, we're gonna have to look you up over there. We're gonna be over in the .org pavilion, so. Please, you know.
I will look you guys up because I will not be at the Intel booth. Trust me about that one. Actually, I think I'm giving a presentation. I'm giving a presentation at the Intel booth in our theater. But other than that, I'm not doing booth duty. But yeah, thanks for the opportunity. I appreciate the chance of talking to you. And yeah, good luck.
Awesome. Make sure you grab some of that good Intel swag and haul it over with you when you come to visit us, and you know we could do an exchange, right? Intel always has the
Bye-bye.
Best stuff, you know.
Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot.
See you in 2 weeks.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. And that was Dirk.
There we go, Dirk. Another good interview. No, no, really. And what? Intel has, like, the best swag, right?
Every year we go there,
they have, like, what was it last year? The cool pens, right?
The light-up pens.
Yeah, that was pretty cool, man. My daughter really dug that for a while.
And the T-shirt.
She broke it, like, 15 seconds. But
we love the free crap.
Yeah.
You know, and the hookers. I don't think we're going to be able to get that stuff this year because we're presenters now. We're exhibitors.
Bite your freaking tongue, man. That's why I'm going there to be an exhibitor, so I can go 4 days around and collect crap, you know? I'll hide my damn badge. In fact, I have a badge for a general attendance anyway.
So. I was going to say, I have the regular badge as well, so just bring both
of them. I'm going there for 4 days worth of swag this time.
Sharp Music is still working. You know how I know?
Because you just bought something off of iTunes?
I got to work.
Because you put your... What is that? What is that?
I'm previewing some music from iTunes through Sharp Music.
And people are bitching why the stream doesn't work right. Hey, I had a question for you. You were saying how cool that that keyboard is for that you got.
I fucking love it, man.
But the problem is, the keys don't map.
What?
In Linux.
Why wouldn't they map in Linux?
Well, the Apple key.
So the Windows key doesn't map in Linux either. Big fucking deal.
And the option key, it's a pain in the butt.
Can't you use, you can go through and set it in your X keyboard config thingy, right?
Wait, but you like that keyboard that much?
It's beautiful.
Wait.
I like the configuration of it because it doesn't have, like, I'm one of those guys that doesn't like the L-shaped enter key, you know?
Yeah, it just has a rectangular one.
As an old-time coder, I absolutely have to have my backslash key and my
enter key.
You just hate it when your freaking mind just takes a dump on you like that, right?
It's your enter key.
Yeah, above my enter key. I got to have that, right? My pipe key. That's what I'm trying to get at. My pipe key, have to have it above my enter key. That's where it's supposed to be, all right? If it's not there, the keyboard is wrong and defective and broken. It needs to be right above your rectangularly shaped enter key.
That one is
defective and broken. That's not where it's supposed to be. It needs to be above your enter key. Otherwise, every time I go to type a command and I want to pipe it into something else, I'm pressing enter.
I
have that on the new keyboard, going back and forth between the Sun and a PC keyboard.
Yep, that drives
driving
you crazy.
Me up the wall.
Another thing that really, really sucks is on, I like the mini keyboards too, right, without the number pad on the side, but some of the newer keyboards and the ones that don't have the number keys on the side, like the new USB like Chiclet key ones and stuff like that, they have on the side of the edge of the keys, they have like the arrow keys and stuff like that going up that little middle column where there's never supposed to be anything.
Yeah,
and they always stick the home key next to the backspace key. Well, what that does to me is every time I go to hit backspace,
that's
because
annoying.
I suck at typing, I hit the home key.
That's because
end up screwing my command up, and that annoys the piss.
That's because you got
too.
Sausage fingers.
That's exactly right. Because I'm a little fat, short Irish guy with sausage fingers.
What keyboard are you talking about that has the home key near the?
A lot of the newer ones that come out.
The mini
keys. They have another line of keys up the right hand side, and it has all the arrow keys, and it has home and page up and page down and end and stuff like that. And they stick them right next to the other keys. There's no airspace in there. Really pisses me off. But anyway, to make a long story short, the Apple keyboard does not have that. The Apple keyboard is just a regular old freaking keyboard, right? And it's really good looking. It's got nice tactile feel to it. It's clean. It's not big and huge and gargantuan like all the, I don't know what the hell it is with these people. Come out with these keyboards. They got to have these multimedia keyboards. Got 57 fucking function keys across the top. And then they have four rows of function keys on each side.
And dials?
I got one with a dial on it.
And an eject
button. It's a scroll bar thing. And they got all this stuff. And the keyboard is like 24 inches wide.
You have to upgrade the Microsoft XP. That's a problem.
The keyboard is 24 inches wide. Now, if you got a 24-inch wide keyboard, where the hell do you put your mouse? Right?
The 26th inch.
Well, you get the 26-inch one, which has the scroll pad built into it, right?
Yeah.
And the keyboard. I mean, I want to get back down to where I have a keyboard that has the stuff in the right spot, and I have a mouse that works. And it's hard finding that now, but the new Apple keyboard has a good configuration. I really like it. The only problem with it being that it is, of course, $30. However, since I have easily gone through $100 in the past month and a half on other keyboards, buying wireless keyboards and wireless mice and stuff like that, I may just buy another one of them keyboards and use it on my Linux box just because I'm getting irritated with the other ones.
So the great Steve Jobs says now that you need more than one mouse button. Is that the deal?
Oh, in the new I don't have one of those new mice yet.
What do you want one of those for?
What
I have one. I don't have any problem with
Mighty Mouse, is that what they're called, right?
Yeah, something like
that. I would like to have one of those to try. But the problem with that is the mouse is $50.
Yeah, that's like
a... That's a bargain. Yeah, like
$50
Well, I got $75 at least.
Dude, I have gotten cars for less money than that, right?
I got lucky and got a refurbished one for like $30, so it wasn't
even... Is it really... Is it any good?
You got to pay for the quality.
I have no problem
man.
With it. Maybe I'm just because I got used to it or something.
It doesn't have any buttons on it, though, right?
Yeah,
no,
there's
but
two
it's
buttons,
just,
right?
It's a three-button mouse.
But
three-button scroll mouse.
On which
but there's
way
no actual... Yeah, you have to wiggle the mouse.
Don't be such tightwads, man. Listen,
no, it's just like clicking a mouse.
If you want a superior product, you got to shell out the cash. That is the deal.
It's just like working a regular mouse.
Pat's going to be walking funny with that Apple Pro mouse up his ass in a few minutes, man.
Dude, you should buy yourself one of those iPod cases, too.
Step, click, yeah.
Hey, it's one button mouse, man. It's all you need.
Oh, you know what? You know what? I don't know. Maybe it's something that I have set up on my machines, but on my OS X systems, home button does not work on anything.
Mine is, I've noticed the end button. I didn't notice the home button, but the end key. I use the end key a lot, you know, like you're doing URLs or something.
You press it, nothing happens.
Key, doesn't do shit, right?
Right. Same thing with the home. You press it.
I think I don't think it's a keyboard thing. I think it's an OS.
I don't understand why
that is. I think it's because I have the same thing. Home and end don't move.
And you know what else pisses me off? That it really annoys me, that the difference between OS X and Linux is I'm used to cutting and pasting with a middle click. You know, the middle mouse button.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
And I've done it over and over and over and over again going in OS X, and I'm trying to, like, take a URL and paste it into a terminal or something like that, and I do the middle click thing and paste. Nothing happens, dude. You got to go in. You got to freaking open the Apple.
Control-C, Control-V.
Apple C, Apple V thing or something like that.
Well, if you run the X server on it, then you can do that. As long
as
you run
like,
an X program.
If I'm going to do that, I might as well have a freaking Linux box, you know?
Yeah, well.
I mean, eventually it's probably what's going to happen, but for right now, my whole...
Dan, move the mouse over here. This is annoying.
My whole purpose of getting this right now, at least, you know, what we're going to tell my wife, is that I needed to learn OS X. Once that's done, then, you know, we'll work on other things. Another desktop switcher, man. Have you tried that desktop switcher?
Didn't I recommend? Oh no, I recommend a Quicksilver. I use desktop switcher.
That's nice. It makes me feel like I'm in XFCE, dude.
You know what I don't like about the new version of desktop switcher? You're running the beta version, right?
I downloaded off the site, man.
You have
I have
to
no
be careful. There's the one down there that he has that's like the 0.5 version, but then there's a link there for the beta. If you're running Tiger, you want the beta version. Because the 0.5 has a memory leak in it.
Does it?
Ooh. Yeah, and you get.
I have no idea.
You look in a console, you'll see it bitching all the time. But what was nice about the 0.5, it a feature that if you can map a button so that when you do like, you press like the Apple key and one of your arrows, it would switch between the desktops. But you could actually take an application and like hold down like Shift Apple. Whatever it is, and move it, and it would go to the other desktop.
Oh.
But the new version doesn't have that.
The one that I'm using right now, you hold down Apple, Alt, and then the arrow keys will get you back and forth between the desktops. So.
See, mine, I have it just Apple with the keys right, left, and up and down. How many desktops do you have?
Four.
Yeah, I have eight. And it's nice little
the way it switches. He has eight because he's special.
So I'm better than you. And have you tried?
I only have 512 megs of RAM in the damn thing. I don't think I could do eight.
Have you tried Quicksilver yet?
No, I haven't.
I really like that application.
I haven't tried it.
And I pulled down some of the other stuff that was listed on that guy's Gotta Have site.
Mm-hmm.
And the monitoring ones. I like. There was another one I pulled down. I said, "Oh, this is cool." And
don't know. I didn't get all of them yet. I only have like the base, you know, the basic functionality that I need to get by in there, and I'm just sort of going and exploring and doing a little feeler here and there for in some of like the iService things. And
he had recommended Jibe.
Okay.
Plugin for, was it? No, that was something else, not him. The Jibe plugin for Firefox, which allows you to create a session with other Firefox or even Internet Explorer users that you can share your browser session, and it opens a little chat window at the top, and somebody goes to a page and it appears on everybody's browser. So you can, I mean, I haven't run and I haven't tested it with anybody yet because I don't know anybody else is using Jibe. Jibe.
Oh, you can all share in Dan's porn.
Yeah.
I don't know if that would be a good idea. Might get a little more than you bargained for here.
What else did you say we were going to talk about
pages
there on...
Pages of Tub Girl.
Pat had some stuff he wanted to talk about. What did you want
to
talk about?
Oh, man. All I have to say is Internet Explorer blows, man. When it comes to CSS, man...
Oh, welcome to the party.
God damn it, man.
That's what I told
them
to
come. Damn them to hell.
Don't you hate that? You build a site that looks so great
looks
on
awesome,
everything.
Man.
And then you go over to Internet Explorer, and it's like
dog
pushed
shit.
To the left. To the right. Stuff's falling out of the...
Internet Explorer,
Out of the... The boxes you created.
Garbage, man.
All the margins are off.
So what do? Do you put a little code in there to save if Internet Explorer redirect to Mozilla.org?
You could do that.
That's what I told them to do, right?
One thing you got to be aware of is what's called the box model, and the way that Internet Explorer calculates margins and padding as opposed to the way everybody else calculates margins and padding. Because that's one thing that really screws you up.
You got any good sites that I can check out to throw in those hacks?
I would be careful about using hacks because I went down the path of using hacks for a little bit, but it gets to be a pain in the ass because... Because
you have to maintain two versions of your freaking pages.
Yeah,
that's why.
Right.
Two versions inside one page.
There's a way you can do two versions, but there's other things that you can make stuff work in Internet Explorer by providing different hacks. But certain hacks only work on certain versions.
Yeah.
So you end up having to have multiple hacks. And it's the same thing with, like, PNGs. You can't have transparent PNGs in Internet Explorer. And that really sucks. But I'll pull some sites together.
Piece
that
of crap,
on.
Man. What crap?
It is. It's
so
terrible.
Frustrating, man. It pisses me off.
It does. It sucks. I told him. I said quit using freaking CSS and go back to using, standard tables and shit like that.
CSS,
it's the only way you
nice
can do
thing,
it.
Man.
Or you have a little JavaScript that if it detects Internet Explorer, just to have it go forward the page to getfirefox.org.
Yeah, or it says F you.
This page best viewed in a standards compliant browser.
This
you dipshit.
This is
going to
be something that customers are going to be using.
What you do is you have it redirect. You pull in a style sheet where all the text is white and all the background's white.
So you can't see the screw-ups.
Hey, that's it. Then you don't have any problems.
So, it just comes up and says done.
So we're only 2 weeks away, man, from...
404.
From Linux World Expo, man.
That's it.
2 weeks from... It's right around the corner, man.
LW. And do we have some cool shit to give away?
If it comes in.
If it comes in on time.
If we get it. We have some... If we get it, and that's a big if. We're gonna have.
Well, if we don't get it on time, we'll have it for next year.
Yeah,
that's
right.
When there's no more show.
We'll have a really wicked radio contest after LWE if we don't get it before. But now we got some cool stuff coming, man. And I'm not going to tell you what it is. You're going to have to stop by the booth. Bring money. Because, Pat's going to try and sell you shit when you're there. That's his bag.
Pat is?
He's the PR guy, man.
Pat's selling stuff?
He's going to sell you stuff. He's the DVD pusher.
And Alan's our booth buddy.
We got Alan with the bikini.
No. So, do we have music for tonight?
Yes, I'll bottle my farts.
Can I do some shout-outs first before we cut off?
Yeah, we do. Actually have an Irish listener.
We got a couple, actually. Yeah. Actually, I called them out, and they responded, man. Props to Ireland.
I'm Irish, damn it.
Yeah, but you're not from Dublin, damn it.
No.
You're not in Ireland.
I'm from New York, which is, just as bad.
Let's see. We got Potsky from Kitchener, Ontario. We got Carl Robert from Marquette, Missouri. We got Snowbat from Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. We got Donald from Troutdale, Oregon. Mike from Stillwater, Oklahoma. Jordan from Dayton, Ohio. We've got Alan Rochester from Dunoon, Scotland. We've got Triv the Boff from Medicine Hat, Alberta. We got Wayne from Coca, Florida. We got Jeff Wealth from Spokane, Washington. We've got Can You Score from Taylor, Michigan. We've got Roger Hammer from Minot, North Dakota. We got Rod from Iona. Is that Michigan? MI's Michigan, right?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, it's Michigan. Rod from Iona, Michigan. James Hamilton from London, England.
Minnesota.
We've got...
Is it Minnesota? I don't know.
Mississippi. We've got Nadav Mavrov.
It's really freaking sad. We've got four intelligent men up here.
Dude, I
got to not figure out what fucking state MI is.
I got a master's degree, man. Little use.
MI?
All I do is write code for this crap all day long. You think I can remember it? What time is it?
We've got
12:30. I'm looking at the freaking. I can't even tell what time it is.
Nadav Mavrov from Tel Aviv, 10:30. Israel. We've got Jeebus Rockshorse from 29 Palms, California. Martin McNamara from Dublin, Ireland. Dallas from Overland Park, Kansas. Steve Riddick from Wexford, Ireland. We've got George McLaughlin from Glasgow, Scotland. We've got Stephen Wilson from Erlanger, Kentucky. John Kernock from McKeesport, Pennsylvania. We've got Lee from Auckland, New Zealand. And Jeff Golden from Raymore, Missouri.
Yeah.
How many do we have on the map? All
we're over 500.
A whole lot of them.
There we go.
Oh, Lord.
Got an email from Alan Rochester this week letting us know
that. MI is Michigan.
Michigan.
Yeah, that's what I said.
Missouri? It's Missouri, no?
No, Michigan.
not according to Google, is it?
We got an email this week letting us know that Peanut Linux is no longer Peanut Linux. It's become A Linux. That's
yes, and you know why? Because it no longer resembles a peanut anymore. It's a big, full-featured distro now.
Oh, yeah?
Yes, it is. Check it out. I remember running it when it was, you know, just a little, it was like, you know,
but it
used to be the DSL before DSL came out. Now it's a big old thing. It's still good. Don't get me wrong, but it's not no longer peanut-ish, as in small. Anyway.
Any shout-outs?
You know what I noticed with Logger? When I did it, I used Resound to record Logger, by the way, just to see if it would make any difference. But what I noticed is when I played it back on my GP2X.
Yes.
When I played it back on XMMS, it sounded fine. When I put in headphones, it sounded fine. When I put it in my car at work, it sounded all right. It sounded pretty good. But when I put it on a set of speakers I had at work, it seemed like the volume dropped down. I had to crank it way up. So it doesn't seem to be, for some reason, it doesn't
maybe
seem to be some kind of consistency.
Across. Is this all on the same thing?
All on the same thing. Same
you
file.
May, well, it may be, you know, an impedance issue with speakers. You
a
may
penis
not have
issue? What?
Impedance issue.
A penis issue with your speakers.
Yes.
You need to get it out and flap them. Never mind. It's been a
it
long
just may
day,
take man. More. You just may have to turn the volume up to be able to drive your speakers better. That's all. Crappy speakers too.
Yeah. Crappy.
We'll see what happens. We'll see what happens with this show.
Yeah. And speaking of shows, make sure we just do another little Linux endorsement here because there seems to be a whole lot of shows that are the Linux based that are coming along that you really should listen to, other than just ours. Specifically, please make sure that you patronize the following, the Lotta Linux Links podcast, which I know we have mentioned before is a very good show. Very good show. Keep listening to that. Jack Attack.
Jack.
Tell John that we said hello.
Linux Cult.
Yes, Linux Cult.
Linux Reality.
Distro
Linux
Watch
Reality,
Weekly.
Right. Logger. I wonder who does that Logger
that's
thing.
Some dickhead.
So the guy sounds like a real asshole, making his kids do the reviews and stuff like that. Who else?
Lee Lug.
Yes,
and
Lee
of course
Lug.
Our friends in Britain, Lug Radio.
Yeah, you can listen to them too.
Novell has a podcast now.
LQ Radio. I have not listened to
Radio,
Novell podcast.
Yeah, LQ
but
Radio.
I think I need to add that, don't I?
Which one?
And of course, our buddy Chess from Linux Reality.
Yeah, absolutely. Can't leave that one.
Novell Linux podcast, the Novell podcast. I would assume that should
go
up.
You know, we have to put some of this update your page, and the page that we're reading from.
I have it all updated.
What? Where is it? I didn't see the Novell podcast on there.
I don't have it on there yet. I just found out about it.
Didn't I just say we'll have to update the page? He says, I have it all updated. Where is it on the page? It's not on the page.
I was asking, I said, should that be added? I was talking to Pat mainly. I haven't listened to it. Dude. Is it a Linux podcast? I would assume it is because it's Novell.
Well.
But.
Yeah, it is all Linux, pretty much.
Okay, anyway, the page that we're looking
Linux
at.
Australia.
Yes.
Linux Australia.
Page we're looking at, of course, that has all the links for all of these cool shows on it. Is you can find it right over at http://thelinuxlink.net. That's it. That's the whole URL.
Podcast.
Hit that, and that's going to give you all the cool GNU Linux web radio and podcasts that we are mentioning on this fine episode.
And if there's something on there,
on the
know.
Linux Radio Network here.
That's right.
It's awesome, man. Hey, that I would love to have that, man. Just
what?
Just full 24-hour Linux program.
Linux Radio
Network. We tried doing that.
We were going to do that, but like
we were doing it for a while.
Support, man.
Well, no, we were doing that for a while. The only problem with that is
sucks the shit out of your bandwidth, though, doesn't it?
Well, it does add a little bit, but at the same time, there was only what three shows or four shows that we started doing.
Right, and then we just would wrap them around. And we did episodes of our shows, like we do like 7 episodes.
Yeah, so it'd be like the last 4 episodes of Lug Radio, the last 4 episodes of Linux Box.
Well,
when it was
Well, now we actually do have enough to be able to do that.
Sure,
probably.
If we had you know some volunteers to help and something to defray the bandwidth cost, probably. So,
well, you see, the problem with that is then it's like, well, do you really want to do that, or do you just want to listen to the pull down the episode and listen to the podcast anyhow?
Right.
Yeah, because that kind of like got killed by the podcast.
Yeah, it did.
No.
And also, Chris Tabon is going
to
do
say bye to Ben Rose.
Doing a Linux podcast
bye Ben Rose.
With Leo Laporte, too, supposedly.
Well, we'll see
if
how
we were
going
to do something like that at Linux Radio Network, then you know, we really should do something where we had a whole bunch of live shows and episodes on.
We would need a sponsor, man, to really do something like
Linux
that.
Linux show's coming back.
Yeah,
that's
sure.
What they say.
It's in the last 2 years.
It's coming.
Did you sign up?
Play us out.
Did you sign up?
Play us out.
No, Link did. I'm going to play us out, okay? This is a...
Yeah, buddy.
Crap.
This
bucket.
Is a crap.
Speaking of a lot of Linux links, I got this next... the song that I'm playing tonight.
Excuse me.
Because of what he posted on one of his blogs, Jonathan Coulton. I'm playing one of
We've
Jonathan.
Played his stuff before.
Yes, we have.
Baby Got Back, right?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I'm playing the Town Crash tonight.
And we did
the
one other one, too.
Yeah,
and I don't remember
I've heard
what
the Town Crash, but didn't we right, play the Town Crash before?
And then, we did? I don't
no,
think
maybe
we did.
I just, maybe no. I just listened to it before.
All right, well, here it is, Jonathan Coulton.
The Town
and next
crotch.
Week, we'll play Pat's song that...
Yeah, why not?
We're
going to
play Pat as a crotch right, next week.
The seniors threw a party down the end of Dutton Road.
Don't worry about it.
It was almost cold enough to snow.
Good night, everybody.
None of us could drive then, so we had to get a ride in the back of someone's GTO. She was in the keg line with a yellow plastic. Like I'd never seen a girl before. Puffy leather jacket and a healthy head of hair. With the hair, she was 6'4". I recognized her face right away. She was the town crotch. She was good to was a town crotch, but I loved her like she was mine. There's a lot of things.
Come on, sing
it,
man. This is my song.
Remember now. I remember the town crotch, and I remember the town crotch. I had a pint of soap pocket of my coat. You can hardly taste the alcohol. Watched it from a distance, but I never said a word. I was young and I felt so small. I was no one then. Who was I? She was the town crotch.
She was good to go anytime. She was a town garage.
Just like Alan, she was mine.
Just under the wire. Got drunk and loud under 1,000,000,000 stars. Someone played Steve Miller. Someone set some stuff on fire. The cops came by to bust us, so we left the beer and ran. My head hurt and I couldn't find my ride. She pulled up in a gremlin and she rolled the window down. She said, "Hey kid, get inside." Then she asked my name, drove me home. She was a town crotch. She was good to go in. She was the town crotch, but I loved her like she was mine. There's a lot of things I don't remember now, but I remember the town crotch. I remember the town crotch. I remember the town crotch.
Tasty treats. Where's the? Oh. Wait, I gotta play off.
It's over.
All right, now it's over.